broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web. You're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome, you're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is the place where we celebrate the power of dreams, coincidence, and imagination in our lives. We have a wonderful guest today, Dr. Claire Johnson. She is a vivid and avid and prolific dreamer and dream author. She's written several excellent books on lucid dreaming and on dream therapy. She's also written some fiction inspired by dreams and things that go on in the night. She's a past president of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. And her new book, just out, hot off the press, is called The Art of Transforming Nightmares. And let me just say a couple of things about how much I like this book and why I like this book so much and why it resonates with me so greatly. First of all, it's a very important subject. People are often turned off, you know, about dreaming, paying attention to these things because something has scared them, something's gone bump in the night, and maybe, as Claire tells us, happened in her early childhood, adults exacerbated the situation by saying it's not real, just go back to sleep, don't worry about it. And kids don't trust an adult who talks like that. So The Art of Transforming Nightmares I like because, to begin with, it gives us good reasons to understand that a so-called bad dream could be a passport to healing and self-knowledge. You can learn to play with it and work with it. But one thing that I particularly like about Claire is that, unlike some authors of books on sleep and dreaming, she speaks from her own experience as well as her wide scholarship and study of other people. And I'm very much on these things with Mark Twain when he says, in paraphrase, I don't want to hear about the moon from someone who hasn't been there. I don't want to read any book or any article on dreams that does not reflect directly and openly the author's experience of dreaming. And Claire is a vivid and prolific and practiced dreamer, and a lucid dreamer in particular. So there's a little bit about Claire. Her book is just out. Her website, if I've got it right, is deeplucidreaming.com. Welcome, Claire.
Hi, Robert. Thanks so much for having me on the show. It's always so lovely to chat to you.
Well, it's lovely for you to call in. I gather you're calling in from the Black Forest or somewhere nearby. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. I'm in Germany at the moment, and we've got snow. It looks very pretty. Not very much, though.
Well, snow is fine as long as it's, you know, Christmas card pretty. When it comes down, you know, at 20 or 30 inches, we still think in that old language over here in North America, at least in the United States. Not quite so much sun. We don't have as much as that here, but we have ice, and ice is not great.
That's good.
All right. Let me start, as promised, by inviting you to talk about the origin of interest in these things. And I noticed that in The Art of Transforming Nightmares, your new book, you go right back to the start of your, you know, interest in talking about a dream that scared you when you were 3 years old and how your parents responded to it. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I've been a very big dreamer all my life, and my earliest memory is of a dream I had when I was 3 years old, which was a nightmare. It started off great. I was in a swimming pool having lots of fun, and then I started to sink underneath the surface, and I realized that I was drowning. I couldn't get any air. I was struggling to reach the surface. And everything was going very badly for me. And then I suddenly had a moment of lucidity, and I realized I can either stay in this dream and carry on drowning, or I can wake myself up. So with a huge effort of will, I rolled myself over and over in the water, and that made me roll out of my physical bed and land on the floor with a bump. And I screamed as I fell out. Then my mum came running upstairs, and she said to me, "Oh, Claire, it's okay, because that was just a dream. It wasn't real." And so you can imagine, having just been in that swimming pool and having had that super, super real experience and having all that fear and feeling the water drowning me, to be told by my mother that that wasn't real and that this shadowy bedroom reality was real, was very strange for me. And I've never forgotten that moment of realizing that there are these two worlds, and one of the worlds is acceptable to adults, and they believe that it exists. exists, and that's the only one. And there's this other world, which is just as vivid, just as powerful. And yet, I was being told that that other world was not real. And so that really, that moment was incredibly key in my life. Because as I continued to grow older, I continued to have these incredibly vivid dreams and nightmares and sleep paralysis experiences where you feel like you're trapped in your body and can't move, out of body experiences where you feel yourself zooming out of your body into the air, loads of strange sensations, noises, peculiar things seemed to be happening to me in the night, and I had no one I could really talk to about this because my parents had absolutely no idea. They were very warm, loving parents. It wasn't their fault, but they just were not acquainted with these inner worlds, and my inner world was so rich that I couldn't switch off from it and pretend it wasn't real because I knew it was real. So that sort of started this whole lifetime journey for me into lucid dreaming, out-of-body experiences and nightmares and all the rest of it. So it really did start very early on in my life.
Well, you talk very eloquently about a problem that so many kids have because parents won't listen and don't understand and just tell them to go back to sleep, it's just a dream. But I hear you tell so vividly that three-year-old experience and talk about your need to get out of the dream or else. I'm having all sorts of personal reactions to it. I mean, they're mine, not yours, but I'm wondering, you know, was it essential to get out? Because, of course, famously, we can swim underwater and breathe, and it's a certain kind of dream, but not in that one. In that one, you felt at three, you had to get up, or else. And I'm just wondering, if it's my dream, it's sometimes maybe hard to reach back to 3 years old. I was pronounced clinically dead when I was 3 years old, for example. That was really the root of my interest in all of these things. I checked out of my body, and I was gone, and the doctor said I had died. So maybe that's why I'm reacting so strongly. But I'm thinking, you know, was I really in trouble in another world which has its own physics, you know, which are not to be dismissed, where you could drown? It's not just one of these things where you could float around underwater, you know, breathing like a fish. Or is it something was somatically going on in my body and I needed to get myself out of that? I mean, for me, it was pneumonia. I was drowning in my lungs at age three and eventually came back from it. Have you ever tried to go back into that scene? Because you are somebody who knows how to re-enter a dream and go on with it if you choose. Have you ever tried to go back to that three-year-old self and discover more of what was actually happening?
Yes, and actually, interestingly, when I went back into that dream and imagined that, you know, that there was no need to feel fearful because I was lucid in the dream, you know, in my re-entry, I found that it was because I was having swimming lessons sort of for the first time. I was 3 years old, so we went every Saturday with the whole family to the swimming pool, and I'd had an experience of slipping down underwater. You know, my dad had just let me dunk under the water to get used to having it over my head, and I hadn't felt safe in that moment. And so he pulled me up, of course, immediately, but that spluttering sense of not being able to get air was what was in the dream. But it was very beautiful to re-enter the dream and just breathe underwater. And I mean, I've breathed underwater in so many dreams since then.
Right.
So I think possibly it was to do with that. Yeah.
So you're talking now about going back into that dream and subsequent experiences of breathing underwater, which many of us dreamers have had. But I'm also wondering, I mean, this is perhaps laying too much on your memory of a three-year-old episode, is it also possible that the dream was a premonition or, to some extent, a precognition or an early warning of an episode in the pool in which you could have been drowning? Because, of course, that's one of the things that goes on in so-called bad dreams. The adult world is poorly prepared to recognize and act upon, which is that kids, and in fact, of course, anybody of any age, might see a possible future that might scare them. Is it possible that your three-year-old self, embarking on the adventure of learning to swim, might have seen something that might have got out of hand in an actual pool? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I've thought as well that it could have even been from a past death, a past life or a past death, or even a prediction of how this life might end. I mean, I've entertained all sorts of thoughts about that because it was such a seminal dream for me. And I think that there are all of those elements that are involved. I don't think that dreams only offer one particular meaning. So I'm always ready to find out more about a dream. dream and look at it in that much vaster, through that much vaster sort of lens. And so, yeah, precognition could also be a reason for why that dream emerged.
I'm remembering, just thinking about children and dreams, I was teaching a group at a sort of in a sort of at-risk support group in New Haven, which can be a very tough town in Connecticut. It's close to Yale, very tough town. So there are kids there in a sort of at-risk kid support program doing some kind of art therapy, and we're doing some dream theater and art expression with them. And there's a girl there who's sharing a dream in which he's on a bus ride somewhere, and there's a rest stop, and she gets out, and there's something like a wolf with red eyes, and it's not right. She's terrified. And I just started exploring the dream with her, and fortunately there's a counselor there who, as we discussed, what the mountain road is like, what the rest stop is, he interrupted very nicely. He said, "Excuse me, may I just say, she is describing the road we'll be taking for a field trip in a bus. She hasn't been there yet. She just described in detail by detail where we'll be going. That is the rest stop, and I promise I will be with them. I'll make sure that nothing happens at that rest stop." So I'm just thinking about, you know, how one of the things that we might do in dreams is scout out the possible future. And with kids in particular, as we train adults to listen to them, adults have more to learn from children about dreaming than the other way around, by my observation. One of the things to coach adults to listen for is whether the dream contains a glimpse of the possible future, whether that future needs to be tamed or avoided, or if it's happy to be acted out. Anyway, the variousness of your approach to dreams, your recognition, in other words, that many varieties of dreams, many ways of looking at a dream, is one of the great things about your approach. Just talk to us generally, as you would talk to anybody at all who wants to understand how to approach bad dreams and nightmares. And let's suppose that you're talking to somebody, and there are so many, who've been turned off dreaming, has really asked to have no more dreams because they've been scared by something and haven't wanted to face it. How do you talk to people about the subject in that general way?
Yeah, thank you. So I'll just say that before... related to what you just said, that my daughter has so many precognitive dreams at the moment. She's 11 and she's constantly telling her dream, and then later that day something will happen and it will make the dream come true in some sense. And she recently dreamed that she found a really big, beautiful white feather. And she told me about it at breakfast, and then and we talked about it. And then later we went for a walk on the fields, and we saw a very big falcon perch on a tree, and then it suddenly flew off. We were watching, oh, look, a falcon, how lovely. And suddenly this white thing fell from the tree, and we thought, what's that? And she ran over and picked it up, and it was the dream feather.
So that's terrific.
Yeah.
That's terrific. Claire, I'm sorry, we'll ramble if you don't mind, because that's the way I like to talk about things. But I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing without a hawk, which is a close cousin of falcon, dropping a feather between my legs when I was sitting under an oak tree at the end of 1986. I would not be living in the area where I'm living. I would not have become a dream teacher. I would not have met the Arondiwano, the woman of power of a Native American tradition, except for the feather that was dropped between my knees. I don't remember dreaming the feather being dropped before it happened, but after I picked up the feather and acted on its guidance, you know, the dreaming really got wild.
Wow.
That was a very good story to tell in this particular treatment.
You know, people talk about déjà vu, but I think it's déjà rêvé. You know, they've already dreamed it.
Déjà rêvé.
So much happens in dreams, and then we feel the resonance in our daily life, and it's super amazing when you actually connect with that, and you look around, you're going through your day, and you're like, I dreamed about this, I saw that in my dream, and this happened in my dream, and the whole of life is so beautifully interconnected. Yes,
déjà vu, of course. Our friend Frederick Myers, great Victorian psychic researcher, imported the word déjà vu from French into English. Why it has to be in French, I don't know, but as you were just beginning to tell us, déjà vu is very often the experience of déjà vu. They already dreamed. We dreamed, we don't remember the dream, but except perhaps as the waking event begins to manifest the dream, we start to remember, so we call it déjà vu, already seen, we don't exactly know why. So let's go back to the general question, although I love good stories, so as soon as a good story begins to surface, we'll go off and chase it. Just talk to me about how you talk to people in general, about the possible gift in bad dreams and nightmares, because you have a lovely phrase, which I might have slightly misquoted, about how a nightmare or a bad dream might be a gift in ugly wrapping. I love that idea.
Right, yeah. So the reason this book happened is not only because I had many scary experiences while I was a child, but also because since I started writing books on lucid dreaming and how we can transform things in the dream or when we work with the dream while awake, I've received many, many messages from people who are having a terrible time with their dream life. And they write to me saying, I can't go on. I have nightmares the moment I fall asleep. I'm stuck in sleep paralysis. Horrible things are happening to me during sleep paralysis. Or they say I'm having lucid nightmares. I can't wake myself up. And what can I do about this? And for some people, it is so severe that they are thinking about taking their own life. I mean, that's how bad it gets. And, you know, you can imagine receiving emails like this and wanting to help people. And, you know, I'll write back with tips and advice, and I'll say, are you seeing a therapist? Please, you know, see a therapist. And they'll write back, oh, yeah, I've been in therapy for 5 years or 10 years, and yet nothing is changing on the level of their nightmares. And I think very, very often it's because people want to suppress nightmares because they are so scary, and I understand that urge to suppress something that's fearful. But I honestly feel, after so many years of working with people with nightmares, working with my own nightmares, that we will be able to resolve our nightmares so much faster when we view them as a gift in ugly wrapping paper. You know, it's very unpleasant often to have a nightmare. That's the ugliness of it, or the nastiness. But when we take our courage in both hands and unwrap the nightmare, we will discover its healing gifts. And there are so many ways in which this can happen. Nightmares, I think of them as being red flags. You know, they shout out to us, hey, healing is needed. Change is needed. Well, they tell us, you can't go on like this. You know, something has to change. And so they force us to be honest with ourselves about how well we're coping or what we need to release in order to go on with our life. They force us to recognize that life needs to change on some level. And nobody really likes change. We're all very scared of change. But our dreaming mind sends us these very strong dreams because we have to change. We have to do something. We have to face something. And so that's what I mean when I say that nightmares are gifts in ugly wrapping paper. For example, there's one pretty horrendous nightmare in the nightmare book that I've written. It was a woman who dreamed that she was in her dining room, and she looked up at the chandelier above the dining room table and saw, to her horror, the decapitated head of her cat hanging on this chandelier. And this is her beloved cat. She was absolutely horrified, woke up in a terrible state, didn't know what the dream or what the nightmare was about. But when she took the time to unpack it and work with it, she realized that the cat represented her husband. Her husband had been diagnosed with a severe mental health condition, and he was refusing to take his medication, so it was getting much, much, much worse. And that dream showed her that she was going to have to accept the fact that her husband was not doing well, and they really needed to get help. And in fact, they ended up getting divorced. She realized she could not handle that situation.
Right.
And this sort of nightmare comes. It's a terrible nightmare, but it shows us the truth of a situation, and it shows us, it points us towards change, even if
right.
The change is simply, okay, I have to get out of this situation, or
yes.
The change is, okay, I need to get help in this situation.
Uh-huh.
And
so did she accomplish that understanding through discussion or by going back inside the dream or in some other way?
Yeah. I mean, one of my main techniques for nightmare solutions is called the lucid imaging nightmare solution. So what you do is, you can do this when you've just woken up from a nightmare, or you can also do it any time during the day. If you've just woken up from a nightmare, then take a moment to calm down and have a drink of water and relax, and then ask yourself if it feels okay to re-enter this nightmare. If it feels too scary or too stressful, then don't bother. Do it with someone else. Do it with a friend or a therapist. But if it feels okay, then you re-enter the nightmare in your mind's eye, but this time you are like a movie director, okay? So you can fast forward, rewind, and you are in control of this movie. You can replay it. And you rewind it to what I call the tipping point, which is the moment that the dream turned into a nightmare, so that emotions or negative feelings grew so strong, or the moment the monster jumped out of the cupboard. You rewind it to the tipping point, or go back to the start of the nightmare if it was horrible from start to finish, and then you replay it. And as you replay the nightmare, you can respond intuitively to what's going on in that nightmare without needing to feel the emotions of fear or guilt. If, you know, you can feel safe in that space. It might be right to feel them, but you could also ask in the dream, do you have a message for me? Or you could summon help in that space, get strong friends or allies, animal allies. Yeah? Oh, and you could also fight. Some people fight in those situations, which can be psychologically freeing. Or you can hug the monster to integrate shadow energy. There are very many ways to respond. And when you find a resolution, that's when you often get insight into why you had that dream, why you had that nightmare. And that can really help you to move forward then and act on the dream in a positive way in waking life.
Great. All right. We're listening to Claire Johnson. She's talking about her book, The Art of Transforming Nightmares. She's talking about an approach which I'm very enthusiastic about. I generally call it dream reentry, which is where you try to face what's going on in a dream and face it on its own ground, go back inside the dream, do what you need to do. We'll talk about how it might be more difficult in some cases than others to do that without raising help, calling in allies, etc. So we'll continue our discussion about nightmares and how to turn them to gifts. When you tear off the ugly wrapping paper with Claire Johnson after the break. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. This is Robert Nutt.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the Way of the Dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule, read reviews, and so much more. Visit mossdreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's mossdreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
Vistaprint. I'm sure you've heard the name. Over 17 million small businesses and consumers have used Vistaprint for printed products, ranging from business cards and brochures to invitations and thank you cards. Why? Because Vistaprint has the lowest price guarantee, and you can design your products with templates or upload your design. And they have free products. 3-day rush service and satisfaction is always guaranteed. Try Vistaprint. Just go to the HealthyLife.net advertiser page and click on the Vistaprint logo.
When you're looking for bedding, department store prices can shock you. Well, be shocked no more. Sell steak cheap, not cheap steak. That's the motto of Anna's Linens. Although they don't sell steak, they do sell the best bedding, bath, and home decor items. They strive to provide their merchandise at extreme value to their customers, and they do it. Great everyday prices on everything and military discounts. Plus, if you visit them online, they have clearance items and internet specials. Visit them online now at HealthyLife.net's advertiser page.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
This is Robert Moss. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer. Our wonderful guest is Claire Johnson. You've probably picked up already why you might want to pick up her new book, The Art of Transforming Nightmares. I just want to extend our discussion of how it might be a good strategy to learn to confront a challenge in a bad dream or nightmare on its own ground. And I want to share a couple of brief stories of my own. One of them was a tipping point in my life, not just in a dream. And it came about early in my residence in North America, in other words, more than 30 years ago. And I dreamed on successive nights that a bear, an enormous bear, was trying to get into my house. And I'm trying to keep the bear away. I'm trying to get help. I'm not trying to attack the bear, but I'm frightened. The bear is huge. And then in the latest version of the dream, the bear is inside my bedroom, and the bear is enormous, larger than could possibly fit into the room. And I wake up scared because I'm in the presence of something much bigger than me, fierce and primal. So I decided at that moment, having not yet clarified my own approach to these things, but having always known that dreams matter, I decided I would confront the bear on its own ground. I'm sitting in an armchair. I've drawn the curtains. The phone is off. I just will myself to be back in the dream, and bang, I'm there, and it's not like a movie. It's not rewinding a movie. The bear is there, I can smell it. It's rank, it's feral, it's more real than the physical situation around it. And I have to will myself. Come on, Robert, brave up, to step up to the bear. And the bear, and I'm scared. I really don't want to do it. And the bear wraps its huge arms around me, and I think I'm dead. It's going to crush my ribcage. The vision is completely real. But the hug is gentle, and now we are the same size, and the bear eventually wants me to swap skins and dance with me, and that feels okay. I can do a bear dance. It's not ballet. And to cut to the chase, the bear indicates, mind to mind, I should look at the heart. And I look at the heart center. There's something like an umbilical pumping life force streaming back and forth between the heart of the bear and my bear, my heart. And I can't understand this in rational terms, but it's just so. And the bear's intent, not in human speech, but mind to mind, is this. Call on me. I will show you what you need for healing, and I'll show you how to help other people to heal. And over the last 30-plus years, the promise has been kept. So, Claire, there's an example of facing something on its own ground. However, I've met many people, as you have, who are not ready to do it because it might be vividly real, and they need some support. They need a friend. They need a therapist. Yeah. They can find a therapist who understands dreaming, really understands dreaming. Good luck with that. There are some. But perhaps one of the best things they can do, which you advise in some part of your book, is to find an ally who can assist them. And amongst all the allies to these purposes, because I think in a somewhat shamanic way, the most useful that I have found are the power animals, the spirit animals. The bear, for me, for example, is a guide I would call in for myself and lend or assign to others to do this kind of work. You're facing something scary. Okay, that great mother bear, let's put in a feminine defensive form. Let her come with you when you go to rescue your child, self, or whatever else you need to do. You offer a cornucopia of ways to help people confront what might be going on in a bad dream or nightmare, from follow your breath to call on a spirit helper. Tell us some of the other things that you suggest that people can do when they feel haunted or oppressed by bad dreams.
Yeah. So, first of all, lovely, amazing dream with your bear. That's fantastic. And that is the kind of dream that, becomes a cornerstone in life. And it's very, very powerful that we have this kind of help in our dreams. And it often comes from the animals in our dreams that we feel most scared of when we first meet them. And it actually puts me in mind of the story of a little boy who was always being chased by bears in his dreams until his therapist, who was Anne Wiseman, who wrote an amazing book called The Nightmare Solution, wonderful book for kids, she told him, okay, well, you know, ask the bear why he's chasing you next time this happens. So the little boy managed to do this. The next time the bear was chasing him, he turned around and said, why are you chasing me? And the bear said, well, because in every dream, whenever I try and approach someone, they just run away. I'm very angry about it. I just want some attention. Will you be my friend? And the little boy said, yes, I will be your friend. And so he came out of that lucid dream with a new dream friend. And I always say, you know, a live dream friend is better than a dead dream enemy. You know,
absolutely.
We could choose to fight the bear and kill it, or we could choose to actually find out if it has a message for us and become friends with it. And these dream animals become incredible allies that help us throughout our lives. Yes.
That's a sweet story. I forgot. I met Anne, and she gave me her book in 1993. The ASD conference, as then was in Santa Fe, and So many things happened at that conference, and one of them was that I worked in a morning breakfast dream-sharing group with a woman who dreamed that there was a visitor unexpected in her private space in the house, the only room that she had to herself, really. She called it her sewing room. And she turned around. It was a Native American man, and she looked at his abdomen, and there was a hollow in his abdomen. And sitting in the abdomen, staring at her, was a raven. So we walked outside after the morning dream sharing session. We walk up the art bookstore to look for books on ravens. And as we're walking up the street, we look in the window of an art gallery. Santa Fe is full of art galleries. And there in the window is a statue of a Native American with a hole in the abdomen and a raven sitting in the hole in the abdomen. So all those memories come streaming back when you quote that particular book. I have a use of words which is a bit different from yours, I think. Let me try it out on you. The distinction I make between bad dreams and nightmares is that, to me, in my personal lexicon, a nightmare is just not just a bad dream, it's the broken dream. You have to get out of it. It's too bad. You've got to run away from it. You've got to abort it, end it, leave it unfinished. You can have a bad dream which accomplishes some kind of resolution, even if you still wake with a bad taste in your mouth. But a nightmare is more problematic in the sense, to me, that it's unfinished. And the trick is to finish it somehow and bring it to some kind of healing and resolution. And in the course of doing that by the dream reentry approach or the approach that you recommend, you might discover that what you're hiding from is your own power, your own friend, your own ally.
Yes, and also your own spiritual power. I mean, I absolutely agree with you about that, that nightmares often end at the moment of the greatest fear, and that's why they tend to repeat in a loop, and you see this in people with post-traumatic stress disorder. They will have recurring nightmares that always end at the moment of greatest fear or greatest horror or greatest guilt, depending on what they're about. So it's very important to dream the dream onward, to allow it to change spontaneously, to react in empowered ways within that dream. And sometimes it happens actually spontaneously within a dream. There's one amazing nightmare in The Art of Transforming Nightmares from a woman, Jessica. She has this this dream that she's standing on a shore by the ocean. And there's a big storm, there's forked lightning, and she sees these black flying creatures, and they fly towards her, and she knows they want to destroy the human race, and they're breathing fire, and she's absolutely terrified, and she sees that they are actually dragons, and one dragon swoops towards her, and she knows, okay, this is it, I'm going to die in a moment, and he breathes fire on her. And she has time to notice the intense golds and reds of the flames. And she knows she's dying, but as the fire hits her, she feels totally alive. And she's glowing with this white energy that reaches every part of her mind, body, and the whole of her existence. She feels total purification. There's no fear. There's no pain. And she wakes up from that dream with a completely new state of being. And she says that dream helped her to find her faith. It changed her entire outlook on life. So sometimes these nightmares will spontaneously change when we stand there and face them, knowing we're going to die. It means annihilation, but we'll stand there and let it happen. And then spontaneously they will become something deeply spiritual. Yeah, there's a lot to be said at times, you know, for facing fear in the dream. And we can do that much more easily when we become lucid in a nightmare. And that's why a lot of my work is to do with having lucid dreams, because we can reach states of deep healing when we become lucid in a dream, where there are elements that we don't feel comfortable with, or we know that we need to change something. We can do it then and there in the dream. We can send out healing light. We can sing in the dream. Singing has an amazing energy. It sends healing light.
It's a lovely invitation to do more of these things. All right, we're talking to Claire Johnson. Her new book is The Art of Transforming Nightmares. Just come out. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Mars. We'll be back for more after the break.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
Gingivitis, gum disease, words you don't want in your mouth. But according to the American Dental Association, 3 out of every 4 adults will develop gum disease. Now there's an all-natural way to fight back. Introducing the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies. Developed by a dentist and clinically tested by a leading university, the Natural Dentist Herbal Gum Therapies daily oral rinse and toothpaste was proven to kill the germs that cause gum disease better than the leading brands. Regular use was proven to reduce gingivitis and bleeding gums. The Natural Dentist contains herbs like echinacea and aloe vera and has no alcohol or sugar or harsh chemicals. The Natural Dentist is guaranteed to work or your money back. You can find the Natural Dentist at most drug and health stores, including Trader Joe's, Save-On, Walgreens, and Long's Drug Stores, as well as most health stores, including Whole Foods Markets and Wild Oats. Call 800-615-6895 or visit www.thenaturaldentist.com for more info.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Hello again, this is The Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We're talking to Claire Johnson. Her new book is The Art of Transforming Nightmares. And Claire, I'm looking at a dream that is in your book. It's from a Lithuanian dream scholar, Tadas Stumbris. I haven't met him. I've taught in Lithuania half a dozen times, you know, but I don't think I ever met him. And Lithuania is one of my favorite places to dream. We had astonishing surfacing, including ancient priestess of Zermina, the ancient earth goddess of Lithuania. But anyway, the reason I'm quoting this now is it's so timely, just the first part of it. It's from an interview that he did with you that you then reproduced in your book. Here's a Lithuanian scholar of dreams talking about a dream. I dream there is a pandemic virus that is killing all the people on Earth. Everybody around is dying in the dream. And at the end, it's just me and my grandma, who are the only survivors, but she's lying in her bed very sick. I won't go on with it. There's a realization in the dream that this might be personal rather than transpersonal, but it does raise the rather large question of the extent to which we dream into mass events. You know, reading this today, as opposed to when you did the interview, in the conditions of pandemic, with what it's done to us and all the lives and all the toll it's taken, it leads me to think, you know, about how a dream can be both personal and transpersonal. It can be both social and individual. It also just leads me to think about the general subject of how are people dreaming in the conditions of the plague, in the conditions of pandemic. It seems that many more people are open to dreams. It seems that some of their dreams reflect the anxieties and indeed the traumas that they and their families are going through. And yet there's a tremendous grace, there's a tremendous sort of reward in dreaming these days, in the sense that dreaming we can travel without leaving home. Dreaming we can be as social as we like. So what are the connections? What goes through your mind when you think about the connections between dreaming and our current world situation of pandemic?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. I mean, it's been fascinating from the very beginning to see what's been happening with people's dreams. So about a year ago when this all started, it was discovered that there's 35% more dream recall. You know, people were remembering their dreams more because they were at home in lockdown, they weren't using alarm clocks. And so the dreams were all coming up, and there were many, many dreams related to the pandemic, dreams of threat, nightmares of impending doom, anxiety dreams, many dreams of giant bugs chasing people, or concerns that people are not social distancing correctly. And death was very present in the dreams. So a dreamer might order a taxi and then a hearse shows up, or they might be traveling on a bus and then they look to the right and there's a corpse sitting next to them. Things like this. Often many dreams as well of deceased loved ones coming and telling them, hey, you need to pack your bags because you're going to be joining me soon. You know, dreams like that where death is omnipresent. And in fact, Deirdre Barrett, Harvard psychologist, has written an amazing little book on this called Pandemic Dreams. She interviewed, I think she received over 9,000 pandemic dreams from people. And so it's been very fascinating to look at this as a social phenomenon, you know, what happens when we're all in this situation together. I mean, my own take on it is that we are being forced to wake up to death, and we're being forced to wake up to how precious life is. And this awakening is not a bad thing at all in the long run. In fact, it's a good thing. But, of course, right now it's a very painful process. And I have to think of Carl Jung, who says there is no coming to consciousness without pain. You know, it's very painful.
I noticed a tremendous gap or gulf or distance between prolific dreamers, people who are working with their dreams, playing with their dreams on a regular basis, recording a lot of them, sharing them as a regular practice, and let's say the larger non-dreamy population becoming dreamier. When you talk about all the anxiety and cautionary dreams and the relationship with death that's being revealed, yes, yes, yes. But, you know, Claire, I can read 400 dream reports a day. I'm not exaggerating. I have all these online forums for all these courses that I teach.
Yeah.
And I can very easily, if I wish to, read 400 reports every day. I don't read 400 reports a day. I might read 40. But these are amongst people who are deeply engaged with dreaming. And I see very few dreams of the kind that you just described. Yes, they're scary dreams, but they're more of a mythic or clearly personal nature than dreams that might be warning you not to go to a restaurant or get on a plane. When they're dreams involving death and the afterlife, they're often actually rather optimistic, cheery dreams of seeing people on the other side who are doing well, who might or might not have died during this year, and might or might not be waiting for you. But they're generally sort of happy dreams of recognition that life goes on in any world and that there's somewhere for you to go. In my own dreams, and I notice this in the dreams of a lot of my students and friends, my dreams are generally happy, breezy, adventurous. I do a lot of teaching in my dreams of the way that I used to travel 60% of the time. I'm leading workshops, giving lectures, all sorts of lovely places, some of which are unfamiliar to me. They might be in this world. They might be in the future, but they might be in an alternate reality. So for me and for a lot of some of the regular dreamers I'm in touch with, I would say that one of the graces and blessings of dreaming right now is we're getting out and about. We're having adventures. And we bring back sometimes a lovely hangover, having gone somewhere beautiful and done things we can't do in our physical body. But there's all the difference in the world, I would say, between that kind of engagement with dreaming by people who are familiar with dreaming, do a lot of it, and are used to talking about it and celebrating and acting on it and keeping journals, and people who are just awakening. So, you know, again, it's a whole spectrum, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, you saying that now, just I had a lucid dream this morning that I was in the ocean and I was with my daughter and I looked up and guess what I saw flying across the sky? I saw a tractor. It was one of those old-fashioned tractors, you know, the really little cute ones, and it was flying across the sky, and I was like, okay, that's fine, this is definitely a dream. And I thought for a second, well, what should I do, you know, should I go and fly with the tractor? And I thought, no, you know what, I'm missing the ocean so much, and it's a gorgeous day, and I'm with my daughter in the ocean, in a dream, I'm going to have fun with my daughter, and it was just so beautiful to have that dream. So I absolutely agree with you. I think people who are generally sort of more conscious, more in touch with their dreams, they're going to be having this kind of beautiful dream, escapist dreams, but also, as you say, very positive dreams with deceased loved ones. I think the difference is for people who have never faced their dreams, have never got in contact with them, they're experiencing many more nightmares. I mean, healthcare workers, for example, are sometimes reporting full-on nightmares in which they're unable to save patients, or their patients turn into their loved ones just as they're dying, the ventilators don't work, you know, I mean, terrible things. And these nightmares magnify the fears and stresses that the healthcare workers are facing in their daily lives. But when we know how to work with dreams, it's such a gift, because we can do just as you've just described. You know, we can go off and have fun. We can travel to distant lands. We can connect in very positive ways with the deceased so that we understand within ourselves on a very deep level that life doesn't end at the moment of death. Death is a transition beyond. So it's very, very positive for those who understand dreams.
Right. I would say in both kinds of dreamers, the prolific ones who do a lot of it and happy you're talking about, and the others, there has been a large increase in the number of dreams of the departed, dreams of death, of what follows the death being reported, as if many more people are realizing that they're being prepared through their dreams for what follows this life and for the conditions of life in another world. And it's never too early or too late to be prepared for that. All right, we must pause for another break. We're talking to Claire Johnson. Her new book is The Art of Transforming Nightmares. We'll have more to say about that in a moment. You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Knott.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, the same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you're interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. We have Claire Johnson, who's very well known for books on lucid dreaming. And I was just saying to during the break, I used to detest the phrase lucid dreaming. That's why I called my first book, which is very much about lucid dreaming, conscious dreaming, because back in those days, this is the 90s, mid-90s, a lot of the stuff on lucid dreaming I was seeing was all about control and manipulate your dreams. You can have sex with anybody. And I found the whole discussion so jejune, so adolescent, and so preposterously determined to reduce the immensity of the ocean of dreams to something you can put in a bathtub. But I didn't like the phrase. Thanks to Claire and Robert Wagner and some other very good writers on lucid dreaming, I've warmed up to the phrase. I'm willing to use it now. But whatever phrases we're going to use, I want to talk to Claire about something that interests me and maybe interests all of you, which is, what is the cycle, if there is one, predictable or otherwise, of sleep, dream, waking, activity? What is the 24-hour cycle, if you have one, Claire, in which you are awake, asleep, lucid dreaming, somewhere in between sleep and awake? Is there a regular pattern?
Yeah, well, it's a good question. I mean, at the moment, I have to kind of have some sort of regularity because I have to get up at 6:30 for my daughter, who's 11, you know, to give her breakfast and get her ready for school. So, it's difficult if I go to bed too late. But what I always do is I go back to bed at some point, maybe around 10 in the morning or 10:30, and I do a kind of conscious sleep exercise. Actually, it's an ancient tantric practice called yoga nidra, which I'm sure you must have heard of, Robert. And it's just blissful. It's lucid sleep. It's conscious sleep. You let your body basically fall asleep, and you remain effortlessly aware, and you can go through lucid hypnagogia, that's the pre-sleep imagery and sensations, experience them all as a kind of ladder that takes you straight into a lucid dream, and you can go anywhere you want in that state, or you can simply rest in the light. which is incredibly rejuvenating and wonderful. So I always build that into every day. And I have many moments of daydreaming. I can't get through the day without my dose of daydreaming. I have to have it. So I may lie down on my yoga mat for a bit, or I may just daydream at my desk. You know, I did a lot of writing, and but I need to, I can't just do research all day. I have to have my escapism, and I do that through my
right.
daydreaming. And yeah, so I mean, I'm in a constant cycle of awareness. I'm a very alert, aware person pretty much all the time, but I still get restful, deep sleep, and I've discovered for myself through long practice how to remain conscious also during the deeper stages of sleep. And I'll have these experiences in what I refer to as the lucid light, which is when you find yourself floating in light of any color, and it's incredibly blissful. It's an experience of oneness, so you don't have a dream body anymore. You can let everything dissolve, and you just are. You're just there. And so I go into these spaces very often. And I also find myself having curious dreams. I wanted to ask you what your view on them would be, actually, Robert. So I found myself over, you know, perhaps the last 10 or 12 years or so, periodically and spontaneously meeting people who are either deceased or still alive in white spaces, in lucid dreams. They're kind of like white rooms, but they're made from light. And I think of them as meeting rooms, and I will have quite profound conversations in these rooms, deep philosophical conversations about the nature of consciousness and reality, or sometimes also when I connect with deceased people there, then I will ask them about life on the other side. And I wonder just briefly, you know, what do you think about these kinds of meeting rooms?
What's the word you're saying before rooms? I can't quite hear it.
Meeting, a place to meet.
A meeting room.
Yeah.
Well, yes. I think that the meeting rooms where I meet people are more furnished, more elaborately furnished than yours are, Claire. I mean, I'm trying to find an exact analog, and it's not immediately coming to me. I mean, I've been dreaming of the departed all my life since I was a child. It's nothing exotic about it to me, and it's taken place in many ways. But usually we are in some environment which resembles, you know, plausible human living environment. At some levels it might be more abstract. I remember talking to someone who was sitting in the correct yoga pose and floating in midair. It wasn't exactly a meeting room,
yeah.
But I told him,
yeah,
could he come down from where he was so we could be more comfortable and sit down. sit down on a comfortable sofa, and he did. So I can think of situations where I've talked. He was a very famous scholar, actually, and we had several conversations, and I made a story out of it, which is one of my books, Mysterious Realities. Mircea Eliade is a great Romanian scholar of religion, and the first dream vision unfolded in Romania, his home country. But when I think about, you know, the conversations with the departed, I mean, sometimes they've taken me on tours to show me their transitions, and I'm talking not just about family members, but people from other times with whom I have a connection. But I would say that these locales are usually fairly well furnished, rather than sort of rather abstract white spaces.
Yeah,
I've known this all my life, Claire. I mean, I've known that we can have conversations for real with people who've left this world, and we can learn,
yeah,
about what happens after death from them. That's a very useful thing to do, because one of the distinctions I make between people is between those who know from first-hand experience that consciousness survives death and those who don't understand it yet, whatever their faith or lack of faith. Those of us who know through first-hand experience, and that can come from the extremity of a near-death experience, which is what my childhood experiences are now called, though I don't think of them that way. I died and came back. But it comes very easily and very safely through dreaming. Once we wake up to the fact that consciousness never is confined to the body and brain, except by a lack of imagination. So it's a very useful thing to do more dreaming, whether or not you are face-to-face with people who are living beyond this world. And if you're meeting people who are of this world in places beyond where you currently are, that already tells you that your consciousness is traveling somewhere else. And if you reach the point where you can check with someone else and you dreamed of each other or were together in a certain space, that becomes evidence of what is sometimes called mutual interactive dreaming, all of which is our way of knowing experientially in state-specific science. The only science that is really relevant to this that we have evidence that consciousness, you know, travels beyond the brain and the body. We do, and dreaming is the best way to get it. I'm glad you used the word hypnagogia. A lot of my life is spent in hypnagogia. It's my most important dialogues about spirit and meaning with interesting people have taken place in the hypnagogic zone. I'm there a great deal of the time, and you can call it lucid dreaming if you like. Certainly it can be the portal when you're drifting in that space to a lucid dream adventure. A scene grabs your attention, you're with someone, you want to stay with it, becomes a lucid dream adventure. But I recommend this to people, and in the literature there's, you know, I put a chapter about it in my new book, Growing Big Dreams, but there's not enough. There's Andreas Navramatis' very good book from many years ago with some science and some experience hypnagogia. We need more because it's a very easy launch pad for adventures in lucid dreaming. All right, unfortunately, we're coming near to the end of this conversation. I'd love to go on for another hour. We can't. We're listening to Claire Johnson. A new book is The Art of Transforming Nightmares. Her website is deeplucidreaming.com. Be back in a moment, basically just to say thank you and keep dreaming.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer of webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcast encoders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. earthchannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to earthchannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
All right, isn't that goodbye? We've been listening to Claire Johnson. Her new book is The Art of Transforming Nightmares. This is Robert Moss. By the way, go to my website, mossthemes.com. You'll see I'm offering new online courses. Of course, we're having my first full online version of my Dream Teacher training. It is, as of today, I think, almost fully booked. You might be able to get in. We'll be announcing some new online courses soon, given the conditions we live in. Claire, thank you so much for joining us. You told us wonderful stories, and your approach is so healthy and so true.
Oh, thank you, Robert. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, as always.
Well, good luck with the book, good luck with dreaming, and from now until next time, everybody, may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.